Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. I'm so glad you could join us tonight. Here on X Squared Radio, we're coming to you live from east of the Appalachian Mountains. Our AccuWindow forecast about 55 degrees and just getting over some rain, maybe heading back into it for a couple days. The solar wind today is a paltry 363 kilometers per second. The galactic wind continues to reshape the heliosphere and expose planet Earth to strange high-energy particles. After fading away for a day, sunspot 1056 has returned, and it is growing rapidly. The active region does not yet pose a threat for strong flares, but this could change if its expansion continues this pace. Last night, the crescent moon and the Pleiades star cluster gathered for a pretty close encounter over North America. In Texas, the encounter was so close, the moon actually covered some of the Seven Sisters. Don't worry, Americans who missed the occultation can always catch the next one, just like it, in the year 2023. Tons of sand from deserts in China's interior blew into Beijing Saturday, shrouding China's capital in a yellow-orange haze that authorities warned made the air quality hazardous. There were few people out on the streets where pedestrians could taste the dust. Many of those who had ventured from their homes were wearing face masks, and some left footprints in the yellow film that had settled on the city's streets. Beijing Weather Forecasting Bureau gave the air quality a rare 5, or hazardous, rating, and added that it was not suitable for morning exercises. Parks and open spaces are usually packed from early in the day, with enthusiasts doing martial arts, ballroom dancing, and other activities. The government has spent millions of dollars on projects to rein in the spread of deserts, planting trees and trying to protect what plant cover remains in marginal areas. But the battle is being fought against a backdrop of rising average temperatures and increasing pressure on water resources after three decades of booming growth. I wouldn't put so much faith in the press, Earth Explorers. The Earth is still warming and showing signs of warming, despite the recent winter performance. My new book, Remembering the Future, will be out in ebook form next Sunday. The printed version will take as long as 3 months, as there is a terrible backlog at the printer and publisher. However, you do not have to wait for them. You can read and enjoy it next Sunday. Stay tuned to this program next Sunday, and we'll tell you how you can get your copy instantly. Twitter is alive and well on X Squared Radio. I add stuff all day as we approach the announcement on the Inner Earth Expedition, the launch of the nation's first affordable electric vehicles, and other great things. So follow me on Twitter by searching for Brooks Agnew. We have been listening to your comments and emails. Next month, X Squared Radio will begin the process of becoming syndicated. You have enjoyed the program for 5 years now, and finally, we have been provided a way to get the program onto the airwaves. Your energy has helped us, so please tell a friend. as we get ready to launch X Squared Radio Live. Don't forget, we're always a proud member of the BBS Radio Network, and we will never leave. As long as they are here, we will be here as well. We want to let you know that our format is going to probably change in the next month. Rather than have a single guest on for 3 hours, we may have as many as 4 guests on in the 3 hours. So if you have enjoyed the current format with one author on for 3 hours telling his story to the fullest, let us know. We'll let our producers know. If you want to see more guests on X Squared Radio, then just let us know. We'll be back in 40 seconds with our guests. Don't go away. X Squared Radio is about to begin. Many of you have been stopped in your efforts to explore the world's literature or great works of art or even original science because you lacked the language skills to read German or Latin or even Spanish. We have been taught from our youth that God cursed the world with a confusion of languages after Nimrod attempted to build a tower to approach him. People just wandered off, unable to understand what the other person was saying. No surprises there, really. I've seen the same thing after business meetings where everyone spoke the same language. Tonight on X Squared Radio, we want to discover perhaps what language was like before we were divided into so many types of speech. What is the real root of humanity? What is the metaphysics behind language? Here to help us understand this amazing mystery is Kevin David. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Ni hao, Brooks. How are you?
Hey, I am doing wonderful. What a week we have had. Holy moly. We had real,
absolutely.
We had real live spring here this week. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's spring and also winter at the same time in China. It's having a sandstorm. All my students have been messaging me on what their IM is called. It's called QQ, and I've been getting all these messages, and they're telling me about the weather in Beijing. Very unusual.
Yeah, it really is. I don't know what has been going on there. They've had some kind of very, very strange sandstorms picking up the sand in the deep desert and blowing it all the way into Beijing. I mean, they've had their share of really terrible weather this year. They've had snow. They've had smoggy conditions that were so bad the streetlights came on in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, where I was the same way. The province I was in was experiencing a lot of changes in weather. It would be nice one day, and next thing you know, it's snowing, and it's highly windy, too. I've experienced all along the coastline. Where I was at, in the Shandong province area. And the weather there was windy all the time. Unusual, too.
Goodness. Well, we are told, Kevin, that we are eternal beings having a mortal experience. It isn't so hard to imagine, you know.
We are?
It's not so hard to imagine no ending. I mean, you know, we wake up every day and the sun comes up, and as we get older, it gets easier and easier. But when we have to contemplate no beginning to ourselves, that's where our imagination kind of gets hung up. Now, I'm sure if we existed for millions of years, then there must have been a method of communicating that has existed that long as well. How do we begin to really understand the roots of language?
You know, roots of language have always been inside ourselves. I mean, it's within our blueprint. It's just a matter of taking the time and listening and seeing where the language originates from. We're much more than what we appear to be, and you know that, and listeners do. They're trying to reconcile this with things that are happening. Perhaps they're speaking a language or find themselves speaking a language they don't really understand or comprehend. Etunakota, you know, things like that. You know, what is that language? And it's something that's part of you. It's something that you have to self-discover inside you. It goes back very, very, very long in a period of time as we know it, eons of time. So the original language is part of us. It can be compared to any number of things involving light and sound, acoustics and color and form. It's completely. See, we wake up into a default reality every day, Brooks. It's kind of interesting. We all commonly just wake up to the same default reality, but some of us are feeling something a little bit more than that. Some of us are seeing a little bit beyond that, and are trying to reconcile, what is this? Where are we coming from? And that's kind of the focus of my study. It has been for many, many years.
Well, I mean, it would seem that we would have to have some idea what the oldest known civilization would be. Now, we think back to, you know, the days of Moses or the days of Egypt or the ancient days of China. But we really need to go back much further than that, don't we, to get to the roots of anthropology for the human race?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. You have to remember that the way the configuration of the Earth has changed over the eons of time, and continents aren't where they were, and many of these civilizations are underwater. They're out of the sea. And much of the technology and the advanced technology that existed with them is there, and it's calling to us. And some of us are hearing that, and some of us are drawn to the sea, not so much maybe other places, sacred geometric places like Egypt or Mexico, but some of us are drawn to the sea, and they go, hey, there's no land there. I don't understand. But at one time, yeah, some of these places did exist. And it was pre, pre before these, Egypt and so forth. And the languages originated, you know, with them as it was. So many of these continents, the places of where the original languages and peoples existed, the technologies, are underwater, but they're also hidden very deep into the earth, too. And if you want to call it the inner earth, we can call that, too.
Well, now you've opened it all, so we're going to have to talk about it all. We're going to need all 3 hours. That's all there is to it. So in your studies, and you've got a lot more study into language than I do. I mean, I've kind of been assaulted by language my whole life, languages that just pop out of me in the middle of the night that I don't get to hear, but other people around me get to hear. What is the oldest known civilization?
But it can't be. It's something that's not describable in any known language. What I found is, of course, we still have to find a number of the halls of records, quote unquote. There are a few of them that are being discovered, but there are ones that are so old, so ancient that trying to access these things, takes a little bit more than just digging around. They're almost shadows. In effect, because we do function on multi different planes of realities and dimensions. So we have to think in terms of the ancient cultures doing the same thing. Of course, we're still seeing that three-dimensional reality that we wake up to, but we're much more than that. And the Earth, being polyhedral in this way, etheric, that's the origin. That's the quote-unquote the light being origin. We are much lighter than we were, personality-wise, too. So the forms that we take as humanity became integrated into the matrix of the Earth, these cultures were built upon what that original light-being style culture was, as what we were. So the language of that would be involving light and sound, telepathic communication, things along the lines that once are experiencing, and they can't reconcile that. They're hearing these things, this music, or seeing these things in their mind, these languages, and it's brought to us in human terms that we can understand, because a long time ago, the Indians, the Native Americans, when the first white Europeans came to the shores, they didn't have a reference point as to how these people came to their land. So they're looking out and they're seeing these ripples of water, and you see these white Europeans, soldiers, and where did you come from? And he would point outside to go, look, look, over there. He'd point to the ocean, you know, into the bay, into the cove, and there's a ship there. And the Indians go, I can't see that. They don't know what it is. So the medicine man or the shaman at night would draw the image of the ship in the sand when he'd see this vision. And then the Indians go, yeah, you know what a ship is now. So then they go out the next day, and they'll look into the bay, and they see the ship. We just don't have a frame of reference to see everything except within our minds. And that's how we can reconcile some of these languages that are appearing or awakening within our DNA, within our blueprint program.
Well, when we talk about these ancient languages, you know, some of these things required, of course, the voice, because that's the way we human beings are built now. But it also might have been accompanied by hand signs or even by, you know, colors associated with it. How did we incorporate this into our language?
Well, we can see frequencies, actually the frequencies of color and sound, okay? Hand signs, things that were part of, you know, the humanity as it was evolving, or actually you want to call it de-evolving, you know, from something that's, you know, super, you know, super intelligent to something, you know, that's, we still have that, but somehow we de-evolved. So we have to communicate. We've lost the ability to some extent to communicate as we did before. We would use, you know, frequencies of color and sound and patterns and things that we would identify with. For example, indigo. Indigo would be the third eye. That's the communication. The sound of that would be, a note, a key that you play that would awaken that particular organ, you know, that is atrophied. So sound and color infusing into a certain area of the body produce the response, and that's how it communicates with our intelligence and with our body functions and in our health, for that matter. We know that.
Well,
so how we communicate with each other is very interesting. Back then, it's I kind of know what you're saying, or I can identify what you're. That's how we did it all the time. It was not so much spoken vocal cords, but it was feelings, it was emotions, it was colors. All of this coming as a language that we can understand. We see these in our dreams. We see these when we do our awakening process, and it's amazing because, you know, when I started studying this, the first time this happened, you know, was I started speaking in another language, and I had no idea what this was at all. And I found a Native American, and I this was almost 15, 16 years ago now, and I still haven't reconciled it. But it's just amazing how. But then you'll see colors, you'll see sounds. It's a completely different frame of reference that it takes time to understand it. This is the communication process from these ancient civilizations. They were more light rather than, you know, substance than we are now. And as time went on, so civilizations were built upon each other, and each one of these civilizations, these cultures, had legends. Legends of gods, legends of super beings, the myths, you know, the mythologies came from the original cultures, because they were, in a sense, they were gods. You know, it's comparison to what we would know today. So all these gods that exist, it's just a mirror of what that culture was or what we were once at one time.
Well, one of the things that I notice when I travel the world, I learn a little Japanese, a little German, a little Spanish, even less Hebrew, and, you know, but Chinese escapes me a little bit because it's not so much the words. Like, you know, in our professional training, we hear it said, it's not so much what you say, it's how you say it. You mean the tone of what we're saying? Well, yes, that too. Your facial expressions, your hand motions, your body language, all that, and how you say words. But in Chinese, there's all that and pitch and intonation. This is extremely complex, and it can lead to not only such an incredible misunderstanding, but it can also lead to incredible description, such levels of description and precision in language that really aren't achievable in just plain old English, just the written, you know, read word. There's more to it than that. How did these aspects of pitch and tone and even posture come into the way that we communicate with one another?
It's kind of interesting. I'm just reminded of a movie called Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And remember seeing where the aliens came onto the bluff there, okay? And they wanted to communicate with the aliens. So they communicated in what? Light and sound. So it goes, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. So what was that? What was that? Was a greeting. It was like a communication.
Right, right.
But now listen to this. Now, if I say Nishan Ti Hao Ma, you wouldn't understand what I'm saying. But if I said Nishan Ti Hao Ma, Nishan Ti Hao Ma, in the tonal flex of the Chinese, that means good health to you.
Get out of here.
Nishan Ti, I know.
Oh, that's...
I did it on my radio show. I did my radio show on campus at the university. And the students, you know, they go, they're looking at me and I'm referencing this movie. And they ran out and they watched the movie and they came back and they go, Kevin, it's true. It's really weird. So, but yeah, Nishan Ti Hao Ma means good health to you. So how did the Chinese arrive at that tonal inflection in their language? And how did the director use that in the movie? How did he know that? It's really interesting.
Wow. Well, that's just mind-blowing. I mean, there's so many dimensions. So many dimensions that we could take that, you know, there.
Yeah,
there's an implication that there's an off-world content to the ancient language, that maybe ancient language was taught to early man or came here with settlers from other worlds, which eventually became humans as we know them. Why don't we have records of this? Is there a hall of records somewhere that tells us what our real roots are?
Yeah, part of my quest. When I was over there for almost 4 years, that was part of it. Yeah, and I went over there to teach, but at the same time, the motive was to do the research for the project I was working on, and to go back and find where these hall of records are. And, the inner earth has those. That's the main, that's one of them. But yeah, they do exist. And there are, artifacts involved. And I have a few of those artifacts that are keys to finding these actual libraries, or perhaps it could libraries/stargates, earth gates. We have to think in terms of not just, a stargate or a library as we look at it, but it's a meld of all these different things. And there are artifacts. They do exist, absolutely.
Wow. And have any of the artifacts been found yet? Or is the Hall of Records located?
Yes, absolutely. The problem is we don't know how to play them. example being is, let's take our DVD or our CD. It's filled with music and programming and wonders and an entire library of information. Well, let's take that and go back to 1960 when we were kids. And someone comes up to you and go, this is the entire library, encyclopedia, and it's all these movies on here. What would you do if you looked at this person and looked at this DVD? You think they're crazy.
Yeah, I guess you would.
You see this thing. To us, we're laughing. We're laughing now because we know that this is a DVD, and think of the terms of these artifacts that were found, and we're sitting here playing with them, trying to figure out how they work, how we can access the database, the data stream. It's the same process. And that's what I've been working on for about 10 years. I have the artifacts, and it's a matter of using light, color, sound, and frequency ranges in order to open and access these things. And that's basically the hard wire of it. The soft wire is within us. We're actually a G2. So it takes that. It takes us, and it also takes that, the artifact, and plus where the location is. That's how it works.
Now, are these artifacts, are they iconic in nature? Do they stimulate some kind of ancient memory, or is
Absolutely.
It just a...
Oh yes. Oh yes, they are. It's part of the, even when you enter into a room, and I've been close to these. I know I've been close. It's matter of finding it. It's almost like shadows. It's everything's within like a holographic type thing. And it's like the imagery is you got to find these places. And yeah, you can do that. It's the nature of these things. You can access these, but you got to find the rooms. You got to find the right frequency range or the area in which would resonate with how to open these up. But it's possible. That's amazing. It really is. I haven't even tried it here. I'd say about 10 years ago, when I got more than I can handle. It was like an overload of information. But it's more or less imagery. And we have to remember at our stage of evolution, you know, humanity as it is, we take something like that and say, I want to know the language of the universe. I want to know everything right now. We can't do it. We can't handle it. We have to handle it in stages, just like your awakening. Let's say you're in Karnak, Egypt. You go into a room, and all of a sudden you're speaking another language. You're seeing flashes of imagery come, whatever, symbols, maps, things like that. You're seeing all of this, but if you got all the information at once, it'd be too much for you. It'd be too much for you to access. So you got to take these things in stages, how much you can handle, like turning up the volume. That's how that works.
Well, I know people get, you know, glimpses and shadows. They have dreams. They have visions. They have things that happen in meditation, small downloads, large downloads. And they seem to come from ancient sources or maybe even future sources that have come back to visit us.
Exactly. And
when we wander the world and we see the evidence of these beings who have been here, who have built things, who have tried to build things, we have to ask the question, did those ancient beings move on, or are there still some of them here?
They're probably not going to move on because they have an interest in what's happening here. So we have to remember things are ultra-dimensional. They can change their frequency. They can be standing right next to you and me right now listening. There's no question that, you know, we're being guided, we're being protected, we're being influenced by things, you know, on a different frequency. I mean, it was an old Star Trek episode that I remember that I had dealt with that. So as I was growing up, there's an element of truth in just about everything. So vibrational frequency, how this thing works. Yes, there's no question. It could be standing right next to where you're sitting or floating or whatever, but they do influence us. They influence our ways of what we are, what we're doing, whatever mission we're on. Of course, I doubt that they've moved on because they have an interest in this. But they have left their culture. They have left examples. They have left some things to discover. It's like, for example, God, whatever God you believe in, isn't going to give you courage, isn't going to give you that, but it's going to give you opportunities to discover that. So we're given opportunities to discover our past, our real heritage, and to go past as far back as we can, and to listen to ourselves, and to listen to what's the music in our mind. And that's our map, and we can find these places. It exists. It's very real.
I'm just, you know, when you use the term real and we look at evidence, or you see evidence or I see evidence, how do we proliferate that evidence? How do we get that out to the average person so that they can see that, you know, that either their roots extend, you know, far back than the county from which their genealogy comes from, or even the color of their skin? I'm assuming that the ancient populations weren't as numerous as ours are today, and perhaps they lived much longer than we do today. Where do you think all the souls came from that are here on the earth today?
It's the origin. It's like, okay, who made us? You know, the creators versus the creation. How did the legends come about? There's so many works of writings about this. I remember when I was investigating this back in the early 90s, when I was, you know, investigating, you know, a lot of books on it, but how do you reconcile this? Where do these people come from, or where do these beings come from?
Yeah.
What was their origins? That's the big question, and that's where these records will tell us exactly. You have to go back eons of time, discover the cultures, which are there. The halls of records are there, and it's beyond Atlantis, beyond Mu. It's so far back because of the frame of reference we have. Maybe just take us to back to the time about Mu or Atlantis, but it goes back a lot farther. Once we know how to handle what's happening, you know, a few hundred thousand, then we can go back farther.
Well, I could say that, you know, finding a great hall of records might sort of awaken some people. I mean, especially if the History Channel was there or Discovery Channel or National Geographic Channel, there might be some credibility added to it. But, I mean, what would they say? Okay, we've cracked open the mountain. We're lifting back the door. Oh, my gosh, now I know where we came from. Do you really think that the human race would drop everything they're doing and worshiping now and believe what it is that it is found in the record hall?
Probably not, because it would change the way their belief system is. So there are certain truths that are ingrained, whatever religious experience they're experiencing now may change, and that's frightening to them. It's fear. But then what's going to happen in 2012 or what's going to happen, you know, in the future is going to be a big change. It's going to be a change that's going to happen that they're going to have to deal with. It's going to happen. This is the truth, and this is what's happening. This is what's occurring, and they're going to have to reconcile. They're going to have to do it. They're going to have to listen to what the Earth has to say. So if the Earth says, okay, this is what, because we're part of this. We're part of this experience, this human journey, this experience. And when newer truths or ones that are original, we'll be able to receive these better, more receptive to this knowledge. We couldn't do that in 1960 or 65 or whatever, but maybe now we can, because many people are talking. We have all these radio shows. We have all these ones, like Love Yourself. We're discovering these things. People are more apt to listen. Once they start listening, that's where the magic is. When you start listening to yourself, more things come up, more things are being revealed, more languages that you don't know what they mean, you're speaking. And it's a slow process, but it's accelerating. More people are awakening, more people are coming to realize, man, this is, I can't explain this, but it has no association with any area that's known. You go to a Chinese person, perhaps one of my students, and I've done this, and I've talked about Atlantis and Moon and meditation, and it's not even on their radar. They don't even know what that is because they have a different reference point. The same thing with the Native Americans and the Polynesians. They're actually caretakers of a consciousness. They're guardians of a consciousness because they're entrusted with that. And part of my journey in China had to do with that. What the Chinese and the Polynesians and the Native Americans have to do with the original ones who created the planet.
You know, you say it's accelerating, and it seems to be accelerating coming into the world. One of the things that I notice is that babies seem to have a way of communicating that we might not think very primitive, but they do seem to pass messages along to one another, simple as it might be. Do you think our parents unlearn us from the true way of communicating?
Probably, considering the time that we grew up with. We grew up in the Leave It to Beaver era, and everything was black and white. You know? And then here comes the Beatles, and then here comes, you know, everything in the 60s, and it was like that quick. It was overnight. It was the Beatles. Then it was that period of time between 1964 and 1969 was a tremendous change for all of us. You know, it was make love, not war. It was all these different things. We were discovering colors, bright colors, music, all of this. But that was part of the quote-unquote Age of Aquarius. And we were part of that. So we already discovered it. We were part of that pioneering of what that frame of mind would be now, and it's more acceptable. We're not doing anything different than we did back then. It's just we're saying it in a different way, and we're discovering evidence related to those experiences. There's evidence. There's the physics evidence. That's Brooks Agnew, you know, the physics evidence of this, and then all these others, David Hatcher Childress, all these guys that have come around, come around talking about this. They're just reinforcing what was being awakening back then, 40 years ago.
Well, I think there's a difference, though, because like the shaman that you were describing before, where they were standing on the beach and they could see the ships, but their people couldn't see the ships because they didn't have a frame of reference. We generally don't have a frame of reference, and there are a few of us out here that are getting little glimpses. We can feel the ripples between dimensions and maybe stick our hand through or stick our face through and get a view of what's on the other side and then come back. But largely, the society is just like those natives on the beach. They can't see the ships. They don't know the ships exist. And yet,
exactly.
You know, when we close our eyes and go into meditation, the ships are there.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's just amazing experience. We have to have that frame of reference, and that's what language is about. It's communicated to us as time went on. The original language is still the way it is, light, sound, color, form. But it's not just three-dimensional. I mean, you just can't look at it, and there's more to it. Because a blind person can't see the original. They can't read something because they're blind, but they can feel it.
Well,
if they're in an area, you know, if they're in a sacred site area, they don't have to see it. They can feel it.
Well, I mean, define blindness. I mean, you know, blindness. Complete.
I mean, in a sense, let's say they're absolutely blind physically. Let's say I'm blind and I have a physical problem. I can't see, you know, at all. Not just spiritually blind. But I physically can't read the message. I can't see what the symbols are in that way. They can read Braille, but they can't read that. But they can feel. They can feel the area. They can resonate with that. And then perhaps they may be able to see these images in their minds. I've never spoken to anyone that was blind that did. It would be interesting to see what they feel. But, you know, it goes to show you that the languages are ultra-dimensional. There's more to it than just, you know, moving the letters around or trying to do something, you know, trying to understand, you know, what the pictorials look like, et cetera. There's more to it. There's a story. There's something that's more to that than meets the eye, and it resonates. And then once you see the resonation, then you'll see more of what it's trying to tell you. Then you're gaining reference points. And that's what's happening with ones now. They're just getting a glimpse, and that's really cool. You're doing really good. Just keep doing it. Just flow like the river. Just let it go, and things will come to you as you get used to it. We're finding many that are doing that, and they're getting really excited about it. They have so many questions, and there's not enough answers yet, unfortunately, but we're getting them.
Well, one of the things I found fascinating is that human bodies will give off a spectra of light that can be seen with special instruments. Do you think that we do see this and just pay no attention to it? We're blind to it. We haven't paid any attention to it for a long time. Or do you think we can be conscious of it without the special instruments?
Well, that's the thing. Anything that's man-made assists us in trying to understand it. But the natural ability of us, yeah, we should be able to see it on our own. Answer the question, yes. Anything that's man-made, you're trying to measure something that's not, you know, it's measurable to some extent, like curly in photography. Okay, it's measurement, but it's not the complete picture. There's more to it.
Yeah, there has to be more to it.
Yeah, we have to feel it. Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, because we could get fooled. I mean, someone might say that I am very red, when I know that I feel very green. So how do we project the color we want? And if we don't want to project the color we want, is there a way to gain control of our color output?
Mm-hmm. You can. You think of the color thought as the fastest form of communication. It's thought.
Do you think animals can see this color?
Mm-hmm. I don't. Well, dogs see, for example, they see
black and white.
Yeah, but they do feel. The animals do feel. They have other senses, even though they may not see exactly what, you know, in colors. Some do. But it's a matter of using all your senses to feel it and to see it. And we're capable of doing that. We we're very capable of sensing things that are occurring and be able to see colors. If you're projecting a color, that's your thought pattern. An example being Emoto's work with water crystals. I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he uses water crystals or snowflakes, analyzes the what they look like, and then he projects thoughts or music or sounds to it, and it actually changes form, which is interesting because think about not just the ability of thought projection of a perhaps purified water or playing a symphony or music or thoughts to make that crystal, you know, become beautiful. Or if you play, you know, if you project bad thoughts, the crystals are going to become, you know, not very good in structure. They're very, you know, sad looking. They're very ugly. But if you're happy and say thank you or, you know, things like that, when you express something on something water, consisting of water, it's going to change its frequency. It's going to change its structure. Same thing with the human body. Mostly liquid water. So our thoughts do affect our cellular structure, not then the water. So that's why my students always tell me, be happy, Kevin. Have a great day. They're always messaging me. They're always upbeat. They're always smiling because that's how they're taught. They're taught, you know, to be happy, to accept it, to do this. And my students do this for me. And they always express, be happy, have a nice day. And it's always, and it makes you feel good because your body feels good because they're projecting and you're projecting. And that's how you have good health. Ni shanti kama.
That is so cool. Well, let me ask you this.
It is, just when you think about all of this.
It really is. I mean, let me ask you this. How important is it, you know, for our aura, for our true self? I mean, if the aura is giving off a certain color and we're really getting a true biofeedback of that color, how important is that for our true self? I mean, can people talk one game and be an entirely different color? And if we could see it, then perhaps we could prevent ourselves from being deceived. You know, if we could really see someone's real aura, could we tell if they were being true or not?
Yeah, you can. I mean, you know, some are very they sense this, and they can do that. Yeah, it's a natural way of communication. Again, it's a language. It's a language of, you know, communication, you know, colors and aura and all that. Yes, it's very true. You'd be able to sense all that. Yeah. And that's part of our nature. That's part of what we have inside us. You know, we are the hall of records. It's inside of us. It's a matter of we may need a jump start to kind of understand a lot of what's going around us because it's but once you start seeing it, it's part of your reference point. If you can see auras, and then you're doing really well. I mean, it's something that's so cool.
You know, it kind of reminds me of animals like cuttlefish and octopuses that can communicate with color arrangements on their skin. Do humans do this too? I mean, we just don't see it?
Aliens, yeah. I wouldn't say so much that, but it can change your frequency. It can change your frequency, and you can project some, you know, if you walk into a room, for example, let's say Brooks Agnew walks into a room, there's going to be some sort of magnetic feeling, right? You know, they're going to recognize that, as opposed to someone who may not be as recognizable, or they have an attitude, people are going to sense that. So, yes, it's possible. It is like that. We're not so much projecting a color, but we are projecting emotional content. Ah, that's the interesting point, is how we project emotional content to one another, the language of communication in that way. But that will also project an aura. Some can pick that up. They can actually see the color. Yeah.
Interesting. I guess what I'm trying to do is get kind of a synchronizing between sound, pitch, the, you know, intonation that we add to language, facial expressions, posture, and even color. If all of these were part of the ancient language, and I really believe as complex of beings as humans are, and certainly as complex as our messages are to one another, and how frequently we misunderstand each other. I mean, completely. What we want to say, what we want to accomplish, turns out not to be at all what we say or what we accomplish.
Absolutely.
Because we're not employing all of the aspects of communication. Let's just call it the full spectrum of language. Let's call it communication. You're an expert at it. How you're taking people who have spoken Chinese since the earth cooled, and you're teaching them English. How do you do this? How do you get understanding across to them?
It has to do a lot with the emotional content of the language. I have to understand them from their viewpoint, and they have to also understand. When you're teaching a language, it's not just words. For example, a Native American, the word for life in most Native American languages, when we say the word life, what do you think of? Is it just something, well, life, breathing, whatever? But to a Native American, this is something that is the circle of life. There's more to it. There's more emotion in the language. They also have, when they were approached by Europeans after, you know, during the time of back in the 1800s when they were taking their land from them, the Lakota Indian, the Sioux, had no word for ownership of land. They had no concept of ownership. There's no concept. They don't understand it because they're part of that. So it's the emotional content of the language. Once you understand that, because they're looking at us, they go, we don't own the earth. And that's why they have so many problems on the reservation, because it's a prison. It's a prison to them. That's why there's a lot of problems. Because it's like, you know, they need to be free, because that's part of, you know, the earth. I mean, that's the land that they've inherited from their children, and to just place them and force them and put them on a reservation, it's difficult for them to exist. It's not in their consciousness. Their consciousness is saying, you know, it's an infinite freedom, and they're being deprived of that, and that's why they're suffering. So that's how languages work. There's a lot that has to do with the emotional content of the language. When I teach my kids, they teach me too. And it's how the communication, how we feel the language, and that's how I teach it. You have to feel what that word is. How do I improve my spoken? How do I improve my spoken English? They always ask me, the most popular, how do I do that? I say, get the feel for the language. Mm. And then I'll ask you the same question. How do I improve my spoken Chinese? And they start laughing at me because they know the answer is the same answer as mine. It's identical. You have to feel the language. Mm. So I answer their question with a question, and then we start exploring the languages. But their languages have so many different tones to it, and one word has four tones. It's amazing. Lao Shu means teacher. Now, if I say Lao Shu, that might mean horse.
Well, I've known teachers that were horses.
Exactly. That's why Westerners have so much trouble with the language, and I still have trouble even after going on 4 years. You know, my friends say, you know, you speak American Chinese. You know, they're laughing at me. But we're not used to the tone inflections and how that feels like, the language. And it's a very impressive language. It really is. It's a very, I shouldn't say so much complex, but it's a very human emotional language. You got to have the feel in order to understand. That's why, in order for us to understand something so far back in time, you have to have a feel for, you know, what's happening now. And then your journey can take you back farther. So you learn a little bit now, then you learn later. And you'll find your way back.
Oh, yeah. And the idea is to keep growing. One of my listeners, Alex, says, we see more as we grow. The holdback is no desire to grow.
Yeah. And don't have the fear. That's another thing. Don't be afraid. Just express yourself. And that's the problem that I have in China with my students. They're so shy. They can't express it. They're afraid. I go, that's okay. I need to know that. I need to know you have to express that language.
Yeah.
So I can help you. And that's what it is. It's just we have to grow. We're always growing. And as we grow, we outgrow our toys.
Well, maybe
that we did as a child, you know.
Maybe as we continue to grow and develop, our full spectrum can only unfold when we do not need to communicate through words anymore. You know, it sounds so much. I remember an episode of King of the Hill. Billy came home with an F in English, to which his dad replied, "Billy, an F in English? You speak English."
Speak the language. It's like, come on, it's right there.
Well, there are billions of people on the earth who speak English, but there are very few who have actually mastered the language. You know, is this a battle of awareness that we just can't win? Or, you know, are we ever going to get to where we can communicate and eliminate the differences between us?
Yes, you can. It's just a matter of, it's you. I mean, you're everything that your ancestors are. If you regress in a dream or an experience, that could be your ancestors talking to you. We have to remember, this is so important, that we are what our ancestors were. So perhaps if you have some sort of dream or some experience or you resonate with something, that's probably where your ancestors were. Or maybe you're on a boat and you're in the Atlantic Ocean somewhere in Iceland or wherever, and you go, well, this is familiar. Well, yeah, maybe about 16 fathoms down.
Well, I mean, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, is it familiar? Is it familiar to us because we're remembering an ancestor, or are we recalling a previous life where we did this?
It could be a combination of both. It could be a combination. You can't discount, because we are everything our ancestors were. Plus, it could be a previous life, too. It could be an interaction, an interconnection, an identifying point. They're going to give you a reference point. Somehow, your ancestors are everything you are. Therefore, they could be talking to you. They could be speaking through you. And it could be that past life. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It could be an interconnection. It's just trying to reconcile what it is or understand. But just enjoy the ride. Enjoy the experience and listen and talk. And it's okay. Speak in the language you don't know, because somebody may come along and converse with you. Nakota.
What was that?
What's that?
What was that you just said?
Atu Nakota, meaning the mountain of love, in a language that I don't understand that I speak.
So what does Ame Ko Da mean?
Nakota. Atu Ane Nakota, meaning the mountain of love. Nakota.
Interesting. How similar that is. So, you know, we have very few old cultures on the earth today. I mean, many of them, even the old ones that we see, have been somewhat modernized. They have two main themes that they all have in common. They all speak of a flood event, and they all speak of having come out of the earth, like from a hollow earth. Why do you think they have the idea of a hollow earth in their old histories?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, of course, when I was younger, I guess one of my first movies that I loved was Journey to the Center of the Earth, and it resonated with me. That made a lot of sense. You know, everything with that movie, and it's true. I mean, we have to look at in terms of, you know, what we see and what really is. You know, it could be the twin circles. You know, everything seems to work in dualities. You know, when procreation is that man and woman duality. Okay, we have the ability to create something. So yeah, it's the inner earth. Yeah, the history of that's another hall of records, all in itself. Yeah, cultures, but yeah, the cultures coming from that point in time, the inner earth, and they always have these legends about what happened to the earth. Well, when did this happen? Was there a great flood, or was it just a lake that overflowed? And, destroyed some things in the Mediterranean. There's so many different stories or allegories, but every culture has legends. That's what's so interesting about going, where did these legends begin? What culture did they originate? And the inner earth is something that is so fantastic that I'd love to find that, the Halls of Records. I'd love to go and, you know, actually and actually find that.
Oh, yeah, 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 as would I, as would I. Well, we're coming up to the top of the first hour. I'm going to play some music that was recorded by a band called Adiemus, and it's in a language that they say was channeled from the inner earth. So we'll be back right after this with my guest Kevin David. Don't go away. X Squared Radio will return.